even as assertively companies are automating and integrating technology, it's always going to be about the people.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Curious Advantage podcast. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and businesses, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understanding of curiosity from neuroscience, anthropology, history, business, and behaviorism, and makes it useful for everyone. My name is Simon Brown. I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage. And today I'm here with my co-authors, Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And Garrick Jones.
Hello.
And we're delighted to be joined by Brandon Carson. Brandon is an innovative learning strategist with extensive experience in creating global workforce development strategies for companies of all sizes, ranging from startups to some of the largest global companies. He's currently VP of Learning and Leadership at Walmart, based in the US, and he's held previous roles as Director of Learning at Delta Airlines, also at Home Depot, and he was the Chief Learning Architect at Microsoft. He's also worked with Yahoo and Sun Microsystems, and we'll be asking him about some of those in a moment. He's also author of several books on talent development, and he's very much a recognized industry expert. He's received many leading awards in recognition of his and his team's work over the years. That includes the ATD Best Award, Learning Guild's People's Choice Award, and many, many Brandon Hall Awards. His latest playbook, or latest book, called the L&D Playbook, which I have a copy of here, is published by ATD, and with which, in the words of my good friend Oliver Amrine at UBS, is: you can formulate your strategy and become a trusted business partner for enhancing the performance the digital workforce needs. So thanks, Oliver, for that. And we look forward to hearing more about the wise words that are in the L&D playbook for the digital age. Also of particular note is the work that Brandon does on top of his day job, and that's where he founded a nonprofit called L&D Cares, which provides coaching, mentoring, and resources to learning and talent development professionals, and we'll be diving into that one as well later. So welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, Brandon.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. Appreciate you inviting me.
Looking forward to our conversation. So you've got over 20 years of experience in talent development and organizational strategy. You've written books about learning, with your latest one being the L&D's Playbook for the Digital Age. So we're super curious to hear about your journey and stories. So maybe to kick us off, can you take us through your journey from Sun, Yahoo, Microsoft, so the tech sector, through to Home Depot, Delta Airlines, and now probably one of the companies that employs the most people in the world at Walmart. So what did that journey look like?
Yes, what a journey. 20 years to over two decades. I've been fortunate to have a varied career, as you just spelled out. And it's been an accidental career. I've been very lucky to have had so many great experiences, but I didn't plan to be in L&D at all. So it's just sort of accidental. I happened to live in Silicon Valley as the internet was born. And tech companies were some of the first to leverage the internet for training. I worked on the first LMS implementation at Intel. I even designed their first e-learning course. So I brought game-based training to Oracle, which really was not well received by leaders there at the time. And with Tiagi, we built the first online game generator software. So it's been a blast. I started with Authorware back in the day when it was Mac only as an authoring tool. It was $10,000 a box. So it's just really been an interesting journey. And I've been lucky to experience and take on different roles through the practice or in the practice throughout my career. So it's been really fantastic. I came to Walmart in 2021 as part of their effort to take a more holistic view of how to strengthen the impact of learning across the enterprise. Like you said, it's a big, it's like I call it the continent of Walmart. We're transitioning Walmart to be an academy company. And by that, we mean a strong culture of learning to drive its talent development and really focus more on career progression and mobility. So it's just been an interesting accidental career, and I've had a blast.
Uh-huh. So I'm really curious to know what differences you saw across these companies. So from Silicon Valley Tech through to airlines and Home Depot and, yeah, Walmart. So did they all face the same challenges, or were they very different?
No, it's a great question. I mean, my perspective is simple, and it connects to any company, really at any size. Company culture significantly matters when it comes to both the workplace and the workforce. And I think there are two things to consider. Does the company have a learning culture? I've been in companies that do indeed, you know, place a priority on this. And I've been in companies that see it very transactional, and training is just a transaction to complete so people can get back to work. And two, is the training org a cost center and seen as a cost burden? Navigating the complexity of work in a culture that only sees training and even the workforce itself as a cost burden is quite a challenge. Mm. And so as we move through the digital age and work to overcome the skills gaps and develop our talent and all the challenges around that, we need business leaders at the C-level, and candidly, in a lot of respects, this is a CEO problem. We need them to lift learning to business strategy and fund it appropriately. Until learning leaders and business leaders grasp this concept and realize we need high performers at every level in the organization, we'll struggle to either buy or build the talent that moves the business forward. So I think culture, you know, honestly, across all these companies, to the question you're asking, culture matters more than ever. Mm. And the next 5 years for us in L&D and HR is going to be more transformational than the last 50. This is not the time for complacency for companies. So yes, talent development is a challenge across all, but I think it is simpler than we think it is.
So, Brandon, I'm fascinated by the fact that you say there's more transition and transformation required in the next 50 years, anything we've done before, and that we need to skill up the people who are responsible for to help them manage all of that. I mean, you say we need to do it at every level. Currently, you have this incredible experience, and you are the CLO of a company that has 2.3 million people in it. How do you do it? How do you enable learning at such a scale for, you know, at every level?
Well, Walmart is what I call both an exponential and adaptive organization. And by this, I mean it's an organic and living ecosystem that's driven by a stunningly simple operating model. And it's driven by purpose. And that purpose is to ensure customers save money so they can live better. That is the purpose of the company. And it's simple. And this purpose creates a singular mindset that first begins with the customer experience, fueled by the experience we design for our employees. We refer to them as associates. And so this harmonizes across the company in everything we do. And so if you create a purpose-driven organization as the foundation of what you do, then it doesn't matter if you have 10 employees or 10 million, I don't think. Always focus on the employee experience first. Understand your service delivery model. Carefully cultivate the company and the company culture. And to be successful at this, you must create a learning culture and become a learning company. And I know I'm talking about that a lot, but you know, we are assertively out of the manufacturing age. We are in the digital age, and every company is a technology company now. And so if you're not aligned to the simple fact that your operating model must adapt, then you will be left behind. So I think, you know, we talk a lot about scale, and we talk a lot about it at the company. And yes, we have a big, awesome, you know, number of employees, but driven by that purpose, connected to what people are doing and how the work gets done. It sounds simple, but it really does not need to be more complex than that. Always keep aligned to your purpose and focus on your associates and your employees so that that mindset is cultivated across the company.
Brandon, I'd like to ask about curiosity. Of course, at the Curious Advantage, we are fascinated about how organizations are using curiosity to help shape their culture and deliver learning. So does curiosity play a role there at Walmart? If so, how?
That's why I was excited when your book came out, actually, because you sort of captured that needed element, if you will, across. I see curiosity as the singular differentiator for those that stand apart. There are consequences that this exponential age brings us. And the biggest challenge is putting more thought behind big decisions. And we make a lot of these decisions all the time because it's a complicated and complex world we're in. And so a lot of times those decisions we're making can have pretty big impact and big effects, right? And there's a tipping point where confusion and chaos occurs, and managing change is a capability that we all need. So that's why that I think we need more systems thinkers, people who can think across, connect the dots. And the key kind of core capability in driving that type of thinking or that mindset shift that's needed is curiosity. I firmly believe that a curious mindset begins with humility, coming at what we do without hubris and with an open mind. It's needed. I had a leader once tell me, don't go into a room thinking you have all the answers. Lean in and listen, and then you'll be able to better formulate a true perspective, and that takes a curious mindset. And so I think you're spot on with what you're saying about the curious advantage. And it is necessary. Our president of our US business often talks about we really run to the big problems. You know, and a lot of us at certain levels, at every level, we have decisions to make, and sometimes those are big decisions. Sometimes they're not. But having that curious mindset is compelling and necessary for us to be able to filter through all of that noise to get to the signal, you know, the most important or meaningful part of what we do every day.
I loved how you described it around curiosity is useful for helping navigate complexity. And I certainly can imagine that. We talk about this in the book, and we often reference curiosity being about how you navigate. Do you have an example of where you've seen that happen, where you've been faced with the board, they've been faced with a big decision or a big problem to solve, and they've used curiosity to navigate through that?
Yeah, a couple of situations that I can think about just in my recent past, prior to Walmart even. We had a situation at the airline I worked at where you wouldn't think about this normally, but we were doing an LMS redeployment. We were deploying a new LMS, and there was a lot of data conversion that was necessary to bring the new system on. And the way we operate is that the LMS is critically important to the operation of the business, because from a safety perspective, the employees that need to go to work on, you know, around the airplane have to be certified and, you know, properly trained to do that from a safety standpoint. And so every time they clock in to do their job, the system checks the LMS to ensure that their certifications are up to date, right?
Right. Wow. So it's very live.
If they're not up to date, yeah, it's live, it's real time, it's happening right there when they log in. If it's not up to date, they're not allowed to go to work. Right. And so it's a great safety mechanism, if you will, to ensure that the workforce is, you know, properly trained. And so I'm at a meeting one day with a bunch of leaders at the company, and my boss comes over to me and he pulls me aside and he's like, flights are grounded in JFK because the LMS is what we're hearing. What's going on? And well, this is a situation where you don't want to be the learning leader when the operation is coming to a halt because of your learning system, right? And so what had happened was the LMS was not approving people to go to work because of data corruption in the changeover to the new LMS. And the problem with that is we tried to go through a phased turnover to this LMS, but it wasn't possible because of the complexity of how the operation works. We needed to just flip the switch and go, right? And because it was impossible to have different data stores to connect to in a phased approach. So lots of complexity in the decision-making to move to just flipping the switch and going. And I don't want to say we flip the switch in hope, We had done proper testing, we thought, and we didn't think there would be a problem. But that's an example of complicated and complex systems that drive the business. Now, when you think about it, afterwards, during the investigation, we realized that from 0 to 10, all of the systems that are being used in the organization are rated. You know, they're numbered based on their criticality. So something at a 0 is the most critical. If something goes wrong with that, then it's going to be immediately looked at within seconds, for example, right? Well, the LMS was leveled at number 4 in criticality, which is lower on the, you know, on the stack there. After that, the LMS was raised to level 2 for criticality because it is critical to the functioning of the business. And so a couple of great things is, you know, a recognition that training and how we were doing it was critical to the operation of the business. So when we're making decisions about the systems, in this example, they really are crucial and it's important to get it right. And so how that connects to curiosity is in the planning, when you're formulating the planning of systems change, you know, being able to, like I said earlier on the systems thinking, try to connect the dots and figure out what the impact is, takes that curious mindset, right, to ask hard questions and to think about things that you may not think are really problems, right? So that's one example where we have to raise our level of thinking and be more curious about how the connections across the system really come together to impact areas we wouldn't think about initially.
I can absolutely empathize with the pain and stress I imagine that went through there, that in the past I've seen that similar level of criticality that actually is often overlooked, how dependent sometimes we are on those training records, whether it's from a banking perspective to get into the system to be able to work in the morning, whether it's from a manufacturing perspective to be able to operate a piece of machinery. A lot of this can be dependent on their training records. And if those aren't available, suddenly things grind to a halt. And exactly. It can be quite an experience. So interesting, because the sort of linking that through to the role of curiosity, there was research by Francesca Gino at Harvard that was published in the Harvard Business Review around how curiosity actually leads us to making better decisions. And the rationale through her research that she found on that was how if we're curious, we think through all the outcomes and we think through what might happen. And therefore thinking through, you know, if this system went down, what might be the outcomes? What would it lead to? What could that, and asking those questions and almost doing the sort of pre-mortem type piece. Definitely a role that curiosity can play there in helping preempt some of those things.
Definitely.
Maybe changing tack a little bit. So I'd like to dive into your book, and it'd be great maybe just to kick us off if you could give us an overview around the L&D playbook for the digital age. So, you know, in your own words, what's the book about? What prompted you to write it? Be great to hear a bit more.
It's interesting. My first book was written in 2017, Learning in the Age of Immediacy. And it was really about the factors that are impacting the workplace and the workforce brought about by the digital age. But it's at a higher level. It's really asking us to take a broad look at these forces that are driving the change and how it's impacting all of us who work, right? And I thought on the second, kind of this book is really a follow-up, if you will, to get a little more tactical on what should L&D be thinking about from their organizational, or, you know, from how they're organized, from where they are sitting in the enterprise, what their capabilities are and what their strategies need to evolve to being, right? Because for the last 50 years, we've been kind of based on a service model in corporate training, and in many instances, a cost center burden, like I mentioned earlier. So the biggest challenge for companies today is to stop seeing their workforce as a cost burden and stop placing their training organizations in a cost center model where we're funded on our headcount and or projects that we need to deliver on. There's a little bit of a call to action in the book, if you will, that we need to fundamentally re-architect the operating model for L&D within the organization. And we need to do this with urgency. So there's some like screaming from the soapbox that I often get on about, we really are facing the single largest job transformation in human history right now. And most companies are being underserved by how they've structured their L&D operations. It's literally the difference between being competitively positioned to succeed or not in this new world of work. And so, you know, there's this, and I talk about this capability crisis, this skills chasm among the workforce. It's massive. And we've got a job to retrain and reskill millions of people. And those, you know, those skills normally we think about inside companies, we'll just go buy those on the open market. And as we can see now, there's a really massive transformation in the job market going on. So there's like two jobs for every one person right now, where we see some implosion in the tech space right now because of overhiring. So it's really, you know, it's a frustrating sort of transition we're in some respects. So the book itself is just me saying, hey, we need a different way of thinking about an L&D operating model. And that means us being lifted up to be part of the business strategy, which is actually happening in a lot of organizations. And as we take our role and, you know, as part of the business strategy and become more visible, the idea behind this book was to sort of set a sort of model, if you will. Let's do a play, the whole idea of a playbook, right? And coming out of COVID, I started writing it during COVID, actually. And the idea of a playbook is it's not a fixed strategy, right? L&D needs to be pliable and flexible to move with the needs of the organization and the workforce and the communities we serve, the businesses and all of that. So it's really a call to action for more of what a lot of folks in the military do, which is they create playbooks based on scenarios or situations that may come forward. So for example, in February, probably January, February of 2020, I don't think there's probably one CEO you can think about that would have thought their entire workforce, you know, from a corporate perspective, would be all of a sudden work from home, and that would actually work, you know, without a strategy. So, and not many of us had a playbook for COVID and all of that. So the idea is, how do you build a more flexible and pliable L&D strategy, right, to rethink and rescope where our priorities need to be?
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book, The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
So the essence of my question is basically, you know, the differences in the types of people that you have to support with different types of education and so on. And how do you do that across the system?
No, it's a big challenge. And you know, candidly, at its foundation, we have an access problem. And even actually, if you go back, we have an imbalance in our society in general, and we have an access problem to education and what companies expect and need that their workforce coming in are capable of doing. And so there's this imbalance, right? And in America, 60% of Americans don't have a college degree, while the majority of jobs that pay more than $40,000 a year in salary require one. So our system as it stands, it says that 26% of the people are eligible for 74% of the jobs. And so you see right from the get-go, there's an imbalance, right? And then when you add access problems, so the cost of acquiring a college degree today is quite astronomical. And so that's the problem in a nutshell, is that there's not enough access to the criteria that companies are requiring for people to make, you know, higher wages. And so as John Boudreau often says, we need to meet the potential workforce where they are with their capability and then skill them to be able to do the work. So our job architectures...
That becomes your job.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so our job architectures are fundamentally out of balance with where the workforce is. So that's where we're starting from. And then inside the organization, when people come on board, we're now corporations are having to sort of just like we provide healthcare linkages, now we're having to provide education first and then training for job functions and job, you know, being able to do the job. So first we have to level up the workforce so that they can effectively communicate and effectively influence and negotiate and build relationships in the complexity of the work as it gets done now. Because again, it's not a scalable efficiency model anymore. We're not all coming into an organization to make widgets, right? And that's why I talk about you need really critical talent at every level, because from now on, every level of worker will be interacting with technology to get their job done. I don't care what level of worker you have, right? The physical worker or the cognitive worker. So technology acumen is necessary, being able to negotiate and traverse different systems inside the physical and digital workplace is necessary. So when we get a workforce that doesn't even have those basic capabilities, then corporations are needing to do that skilling, right? And that education component, and then that skill.
Put the basics in place.
Yeah. And so it's just,
wow.
And I kind of hate to say this, but it is what it is. So what we need to do from a strategic standpoint, that's why I talk about this chasm of capability between the physical worker and the cognitive worker. We need to be able to transition millions of physical workers to become cognitive workers. And that doesn't happen overnight. And it's not, we talk about reskilling or upskilling a lot in this practice. But we have to be realistic with what that means based on the type of work that needs to get done and where that workforce is coming at us from with their capabilities. Right? So that's why I call it a capability crisis right now.
I imagine what many people are afraid of, right? Whether they would define it as a capability crisis or just that, do I have the skills to do the job that is not probably clear what that job is in 5 years time, never mind 10 years time, and how do I get there? I mean, are organizations even configured correctly to address this, Brandon, do you think? And what should we be doing now to prepare?
Well, that's what, no, in a nutshell, no. And that's what John Hagel talks a lot about, is we have moved from what he calls that scalable efficiency work model that no longer exists. We literally trained and developed people to go into organizations where the number one goal was optimal productivity and efficiency to get the job done, right? And as individuals, you needed to be able to do that and maximize your productivity. And that's not how the future of work is going to get done. It's going to be much more team-based, and it's going to be much more augmented by automation. And in many instances, humans are going to be completely replaced by automation. And so digital systems are going to be a part of our future, like I just said. So we need to move away from that scalable efficiency work model to the scalable learning work model, where we actually build the motivation for workers to learn how to do the job more, you know, more productively in some respects as they're doing the work. And we need to build learning into those work systems, both physical and digital. And that doesn't mean learning coming in after the work systems are designed and constructing an overlay onto those systems. It means having your human capital, you know, your L&D HR people involved in the actual design of the workplaces so that we can build more learning into the work systems themselves. And so that's a fundamental rethinking of how we do L&D in the workplace. So a lot of times we talk about in the flow of the work. I don't want us to continue overlaying L&D systems onto bad work systems, right? I want us to rethink the work system themselves.
And that's learning to learn, and it's got to come from inside. I mean, you talked about there's got to be a shift to more team-based work. That you think team-based work is happening because there's more internet information, there's more systemic information in the system. You talk about us facing new types of work which are augmented, which we have to be prepared for. You also mentioned like learning to learn. You have to teach people the skills to be able to learn within the system, which is a new way of approaching learning and a new way of skilling the base, if you like, cognitive work and physical work.
Yes.
Are there any other things you'd put in the curriculum that you would think, okay, you have to pay attention to these as basics?
Well,
101,
if you will. I'll throw out one example of this complicated and complex system of work that impacts every level of worker, if you will. And for a lot of us who focus a lot on frontline workers, there's a lot of significant challenges there, because for a lot of companies, the frontline worker is really the only connection to the company that they'll have. So I remember, this was several years ago, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia from Silicon Valley. And of course, I made the mistake once of asking for a Pepsi in Atlanta. And you should never do that, because it is a Coke city, right? That's the capital, the corporate capital of Coca-Cola. And I went to a movie theater. This was obviously pre-COVID. And they had this joyful wonderment there. It was a machine I'd never seen before, where you could literally configure your own Coke while you stood there in real time. You could mix and match all sorts of syrups and make a whole new, you know, a drink really customized for you. And I thought, wow, this is really, what a world we live in that we can do this. But the challenge is, when a system like that stops working, there's a line of customers waiting to custom craft their own Coke. And if that machine stops working, who are they going to look at? They're going to look at that frontline worker who just happens to be standing there taking movie tickets, right, to try to get everyone into the movie theater. Well, that person is responsible now for troubleshooting this complex machine. And one of the Coke people told me when I was talking about it, they're like, oh, well, it's connected to the internet, so it'll self-heal itself and it'll fix itself. Well, no, not necessarily, because there's a line of people wanting, they're upset because they can't get their Coke, right? And so they're looking at that worker.
They want it now.
What now, you know? And so there's this skill, these conflation of skills like product knowledge and, you know, hospitality and customer experience that we need from frontline workers, and an understanding of the technology and to a certain degree and how it works and how do you navigate that complexity with customers in that situation. So what I'm saying, like, you know, we see this in all sorts of the ways our customers expect to interact with companies now, right? And so the focus on not only skilling, that's just one component. The focus on keeping the humanity in the work is really critically important, and making sure that our workers at every level understand the interconnectedness of these systems and what the customers expect when they come at us. From, like at Walmart, for example, customers have so many different ways now to interact with the company to purchase products that they want. I mean, we literally will deliver items into your home and put them in your refrigerator and your cabinets. We will come to the curbside at a store and deliver to you. We will drone delivery. We will drop things on your porch. There's all sorts of ways that customers expect service now. And so, you know, the challenging aspect of that is to arm our workforce with the, you know, ability to navigate that and to be that sort of systems thinker at every level, so that they can connect the dots across and be more adaptive to what the needs are. And so that means that we have to think differently about how we train and, you know, educate and train our workforce.
Love it. I'm mindful of our time, so I'm going to make sure that we cover your not-for-profit that you set up as well. So maybe can you introduce to us L&D Cares and what it is, and also what prompted you to set it up as well?
So I was at Delta as COVID unfolded in, you know, I don't know if you know, 2019, the year before COVID, was, you know, a record travel year for humanity. So more people moved around the earth than they ever had before. And so we were amazingly busy, as you can imagine. And then all of a sudden, a global pandemic comes around and business just stops. I mean, 98% of our business went away almost immediately, right? And so, like I said, the playbook for that, we didn't really have one. But as COVID started unfolding, I thought to myself, this is going to have global impact across, and it's probably going to impact training organizations or people in HR and in roles where they needed to care for and help others. So in April of 2020, I thought we need to put an organization together that doesn't necessarily help you find a job in case you're getting laid off, because we didn't see a massive amount of layoffs in our practice. But how do we help arm those of us in the people practice to more effectively be able to care for the workforces, you know, that are being impacted because so much change was happening in how we work and how the work was getting done and all that. So we started L&D Cares to help talent development professionals not only thrive and flourish in their own careers, but also just to help others. And so we just came together as a volunteer organization just to have better conversations about how we as a people practice can be more effective in advancing well-being and career resources and mentoring and just assistance in general. And so we've helped over 2,000 L&D and HR professionals since then. And now we've pivoted to offer no-cost mentoring and coaching and additional resources for anyone in the L&D practice to elevate their own capability to help their organizations. So it's no cost at all to join us and take advantage of our offerings.
It sounds fantastic. And Brandon, that's ldcares.org.
Yes, you're correct. ldcares.org. Yes, that's correct. And we're about to kick off our whole new mentoring program in 2 weeks. Cognota, a fantastic platform company, has gracefully donated their platform for us to use for mentoring at scale. So we're going to offer a whole new mentoring program starting in late February. So we're excited about that.
Fabulous. Well, we encourage all our listeners to go check out ldcares.org. In a couple more minutes, so maybe just time for a few quick questions. How would you define curiosity, and what are you most curious about at the moment?
That's a great question. For me, a lot of what I'm thinking about from a curiosity perspective, as a 20-plus year L&D HR professional, I spend a lot of my time actually outside of our domain. And I'm curious about how the world works, how other things connect across, and fashion, arts, poetry, all these different types of creative components, I'm very curious about. I bring that literally back to the practice I do. So I encourage a lot of folks, step outside of our domain a lot of times. I used to go to South by Southwest every year to look at the music festival and the movie part of it as well. So our practice is both art and science. And so
fantastic.
We need to step out of ourselves a lot of times and be curious about the world in general and then bring that back to our practice.
Yeah, and take input from many sources, I hear you doing as well, which is wonderful.
Brandon, if there's one thing to leave our listeners and subscribers with, what would it be?
We are in a unique function within an enterprise. And we, because we usually span across the entire enterprise with what we do, we drive impact in so many different ways. And I would just say that a lot of times I talk about the capability crisis and what our call to action and the things we need to do. But also we need to think about and reflect on what we do bring to our workforce and the companies in which we operate. It really starts with us to keep that humanity in the work as we go forward and to make sure that it's really about the people. Even as assertively companies are automating and integrating technology, it's always going to be about the people. And I think this is the best job in the organization. I think it's the most critical and in some ways the most complex job in the organization. So every now and then we just need to reflect on that and look at our purpose, which is really about keeping the humanity in the work.
Thank you, Brandon. So what a journey we've been on. So we've covered an awful lot in our time today, from your background in Silicon Valley through to the importance of culture and a learning culture, how training shouldn't be a cost center or a burden, and how it's up to CEOs to help to lift learning to the level of business strategy and make sure it's well funded. But I'm sure there's lots we can all play in that as well. We heard about how, despite the challenges of scale of 2 million people, actually in your current role, by having a purpose-driven approach and actually a simple model, actually it doesn't matter whether you've got 10 or 10 million people, you're able to scale your learning across the company. We heard how curiosity can be a single biggest differentiator, how it begins with humility, and how a curious mindset can help us to filter through the noise. You shared around managing through complicated and complex systems and some of the challenges in the past when those systems go down. How within your book you cover the need for us to re-architect the model for learning to deal with the modern world. How we have a skills chasm, how we need to retrain millions of people, how we need to lift up L&D to be part of the business strategy to help deliver against that. And then the role of playbooks, how as a learning organization we need to be more flexible and have a more pliable L&D strategy. And how corporations maybe now also need to step in and provide some of the education that people aren't necessarily coming into the workforce with. So maybe to level up first and then build the skills. So a rich conversation. Any key takeaway from all of that? One thing more important than anything else to leave our listeners with?
I would say that it's just really a challenging time right now, but it's also a very exciting time to be in this practice. And so just really staying aligned to your business and your workforce, that at the end of the day, that's the number one thing.
Great point to end on. Yep, stay aligned to your business and your workforce, and it won't go too far wrong. So massive thank you, Brandon, for joining us. It's been great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to a Curious Advantage podcast. We're curious to hear from you. If you think there was something useful or valuable from this conversation, we encourage you to write a review for the podcast on your preferred channel, saying why this was so and what you've learned from it. Also, please support us by sharing this episode on LinkedIn or your favorite social media platform with your thoughts. We always appreciate hearing from our listeners with your views and having a curious conversation. So join us today using hashtag Curious Advantage. Curious Advantage book and the audiobook are available on Amazon worldwide. Order your copy now to further explore the 7 C's model for being more curious. Subscribe today and keep exploring curiously. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast.
The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon.
Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.